writings surround the globe, written in gold, universal, and MCA company. Day, skyscrapers dominate the center of a sprawling city.
This is the city, Los Angeles, California. 465 square miles of constantly interfacing humanity, representing every race, color, creed, and persuasion. But God, no matter how he is worshipped, chose in his infinite wisdom to deposit here in the cultural nexus of the Pacific Rim. Almost 4 million people work and play here, and like any other place, anywhere, there are those who have it and those who want it. Those who have it enjoy it, no matter how they got it. Those who want it can get it by attempting to better themselves in a sympathetic community populated by decent citizens cheering them on. Or they can try to take it the easy way. Because even in the City of Angels, from time to time, some halos slip. That's where I come in, doing my job to the best of my ability on a daily basis. I work here. I carry a badge.
The man speaking was Sergeant Joe Friday, a tall man in his 30s with a short, almost military-style haircut. He wears a pristine grey suit with a white shirt and black tie pinned down with a silver clip. Joe dons a grey fedora hat and marches up the front steps of the imposing Los Angeles Police HQ. Captions appear in red. A Tom Mankiewicz film. Dan Aykroyd. Tom Hanks. The HQ has a line of flags above the courtyard. A tall white tower rises above the entrance. The same tower features on the gold LA police badge. The film's title appears.
Dragnet!
Captions appear over the badge.
Police officers, ma'am.
Christopher Plummer, Harry Morgan, Alexandra Paul, Jack O'Halloran, Elizabeth Ashley, and Dabney Coleman. Music by Ira Newborn, directed by Tom Mankiewicz. Lights of the LA skyline glitter through the night.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. For example, George Baker is now called Sylvia Wiss.
Red fire department vans are parked around the back of a warehouse. In uniform, the fire chief, who has a handlebar moustache, supervises as his men load boxes into the vans. The boxes are filled with issues of Bait magazine. A cop arrives.
Hey, who called the fire department? What the hell is going on here? Hey, chief, where's the fire?
The chief holds up his finger and grins, then takes a petrol bomb out of his jacket, lights the cloth in the bottleneck, and lobs it into the Bait warehouse, which catches fire. The burly chief picks up the cop by his jacket collar.
See the fire?
I see the fire. I see the fire.
Good. When you wake up, tell Jerry Caesar he's out of business.
The chief knocked the cop out cold. He drops him on the ground, then puts a calling card on the cop's chest. It reads Pagan beneath a devil's head icon. Day, at the police HQ.
It was Wednesday, January 7th. A cool day in Los Angeles with 15-mile-an-hour westerly winds and light scattered clouds at 3,000 feet. I was working day watch out of robbery homicide at the same desk my late Uncle Joe occupied when he served with the department 20 years ago.
Joe's desk is pristine, unlike the others.
Many aspects of the peace officer's routine have changed since my Uncle Joe's time. Now there are new methods, new philosophies, new equipment. The standard service revolver and simple lead sap have given way to taser guns and anodized metal batons. But there's one thing that never changes. The face of crime. It just gets bigger and badder and uglier every day. My partner's name is Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Gannon. My name's Friday.
Joe? Captain?
Frank's late. Must have been held up in traffic.
Frank won't be coming in today, Joe.
24-hour virus?
Or tomorrow.
48?
Frank quit. Bought a goat farm. Moved to Ukiah. Left you this note. He was too broken up to talk about it. Said he knew you'd understand.
Every man has a dream to chase. Frank's was that goat farm. Sure, Captain, I understand. But tell me something.
Yeah?
Those 3.6 million citizens out there, the ones who expected him to be on the job this morning, will they understand?
Joe shakes his head. Captain Gannon rolls his eyes. Outside.
8:47 a.m. Captain Gannon had assigned me to investigate the so-called Pagan robberies, a pattern of serial crimes which had occurred throughout the city. They'd seemed merely irritating at first, but were quickly gaining notoriety through their growing frequency and naked brazenness. I was to contact my new partner at the central receiving lot. A less experienced peace officer might have been concerned he was getting pot luck, but I knew that any detective the department had to offer me was automatically worthy of my respect.
A scruffy man climbs from a wrecked car.
Say, Sergeant Friday, who wants to know?
I'm Pep Strebeck. I'm your new partner.
Not looking like that you aren't, mister.
Oh, really? What's that supposed to mean?
It means I don't care what undercover rock you crawled out from. There's a dress code for detectives in robbery homicide. Section 3-605, 0.10, 0.20, 0.22, 0.24, 0.26, 0.50, 0.70, 0.80. It specifies clean shirt, short hair, tie, pressed trousers, sports jacket or suit, and leather shoes, preferably with a high shine on them.
Pep is now in smart clothes with shorter hair.
9:05 a.m. Strebeck's unauthorized outfit and facial growth were history, and for the first time in 12 years, I rolled into traffic with a new partner at my side.
As Joe turns his back, Pep, who's a younger guy with a friendly face, makes an obscene hand gesture. They get into their unmarked car.
Detective Pep Strebeck, male, Caucasian, 6 feet, 165 pounds, no distinguishing scars. He had an extensive list of merit citations which was tainted by his total disregard for departmental procedure. He pictured himself as some hipster freebird cop, but his wings were about to be clipped because now he was going to play the detective game by my rules.
In the passenger seat of their sober black sedan, Pep watches the rest of the traffic whiz past them.
You know, Friday, we're allowed to go 55. On some occasions, even faster.
I'm well aware of the federally mandated speed limits, Strebeck, but did it ever occur to you that by going 8 miles an hour slower, we might save some gasoline and ease the burden on the poor taxpayers out there who pay our salaries?
Friday, a little extra gas isn't gonna put the city in hock. Besides, this looks bad. Come on, live a little. It's the vertical pedal on the right there.
9:47 a.m. We arrived at the Griffith Park Zoo, Los Angeles' primary habitat for wild animals now sustained in dignified natural captivity. An adult male lion and a security guard had been tranquilized with a dart gun, and subsequent robberies had occurred.
You know, Strebeck, these animals have it pretty good. Simulated surroundings, 3 squares a day. I'll bet if these creatures could talk, they'd give the citizens of this city a big vote of thanks.
Friday, these animals were trapped and stunned and roped and crated and shipped, dropped into cages. You think they were out in the wild forming lines, jockeying for position, saying, take me, I want to live on damp cement?
Well, let's just say when I look in their eyes, mister, I get a different message and we'll leave it at that.
A brunette keeper in a safari hat hurries over.
Are you gentlemen the police?
Ma'am, Friday, Strebeck, robbery. You have some Pagan cards for us, do you?
Yeah. Three of them, left in separate cages. Let me show you where I found them. This is Ben, our boa constrictor. Now, the missing giant anaconda was still here last night at 8:30. I know, because that's when it gets its final feeding. Well, actually, it's not always its final feeding. Sometimes it hides a little snack for later.
Just the facts, if you don't mind, ma'am. What exactly does the central Bolivian anaconda choose to feed on?
It eats whole live groundhogs.
Well, you skipped breakfast this morning, did you, Friday?
Whoever stole it's got to feed it, bub.
We also seem to be missing one of these.
Uh-huh. Ma'am, what is the approximate dry weight of the average Madagascar fruit tree bat?
You mean you don't know?
By the lion enclosure.
Now, this is the one I understand the least.
One of the lions sports a mohawk haircut.
Somebody must have wanted that lion's mane pretty bad to pull a twisted stunt like that.
Although, as mohawks go, it's not that bad. It'll grow back.
Yeah, and how do you tell that to these kids here who've never seen a lion before and now probably won't have the desire to ever see one again?
Kids, it'll grow back.
Yay!
10:35 a.m. Arsonists posing as Los Angeles City firemen had left a pagan card in the charred ruins of a downtown warehouse. We were advised to contact the owner of the stolen merchandise, softcore porno lord Jerry Caesar, at his notorious pleasure compound in the coveted Bel Air section of the city.
Joe pushes a buzzer outside the mansion gates.
Oh, thank God. Vibrator repair.
No, ma'am. Los Angeles Police Department. Sorry.
Joe looks disgruntled. They head up the driveway, passing a bevy of gorgeous women in skimpy outfits doing the gardening.
It's enough to churn your guts, isn't it, Strebeck?
What, you mean this girl pruning this bush with her...
That a smut peddler like Jerry Caesar could build a modern-day Gamora smack dab in the middle of the same city where they recorded We Are the World.
A delighted Pep holds up his police badge as they pass some women in bikinis.
Hi.
Hi. Don't get too friendly.
A blonde in badminton gear greets them at the front steps.
Hi, can I help you?
Police officers, ma'am. LAPD robbery. I'm Friday. It's Detective...
April!
That's right.
She was a bait mate. Bait magazine. They have one every month, and she was featured.
I get the hang of it, Strebeck, in the April issue.
No, Mr. Silly. February. My name is April.
All right, now, don't tell me now. Your favorite movies are The Sound of Music, and yes, Giorgio. You love to go bobbing for apples. Your major turnoffs are anchovies, people who don't use coasters,
And men who smoke in public places. Come on, let's go meet Jerry.
She wags her finger at Joe, takes his cigarette from him, and stubs it. April leads them to the poolside, populated by more stunning women. She points.
There's Jerry right over there.
Pep and Joe both point and nod. April goes, and they head over.
Well, I'm gonna have a place like this someday.
Dream on, Strebeck. Dream on.
Mustachioed 50-something Jerry Caesar lies on a sun lounger in a housecoat and shades.
Yeah, it's about time. I called you cops 3 hours ago.
Yes, sir. My name's Friday. This is Detective Strebeck. Could you please describe what's missing?
Well, how about the entire run at every single copy of our 25th anniversary double issue of Bait?
Bait?
Yeah, it's his skin magazine.
You see? The intelligence subscriber regards it as a politically oriented, socially impacting monthly. I'm not going to allow a gang of cement heads to intimidate me just because I refuse to publish their stupid manifesto.
Would you care to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, here, read it for yourself.
Manifesto of the International Brotherhood of Pagans. We believe that bad sex and good drugs are the cornerstones of a great democracy. The peak of pornography...
I think we get the general idea, Strebeck.
My publishing company is not a private platform for any bunch of yahoos that just come along. I don't care how many copies they buy. Just because they got First Amendment rights, that doesn't mean I have to publish their junk. I've got First Amendment rights, too. Look them up, Friday.
I don't have to look them up, mister. I can quote them to you. Anyhow, how much do you figure a monthly run of your magazine is worth?
Well, let's just say it's more money than you'll ever see in your life. And I do that every month.
At least my money's clean.
I'll tell you what you do, Friday, before you go home and start polishing your pennies. Why don't you go out there and get my magazines back on the stand where they belong?
Listen, hotshot, I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't care for you or for the putrid sludge you're troweling out, but until they change the laws to put you sleaze kings out of business, my job's to help you get back your stench-ridden boxes of smut. And since I'm going to be doing it holding my nose, I'll be doing it with one hand.
Excuse me. Jerry, it's time for your collagen treatment. And don't forget, you're having your pores sucked at 3.
Thank you, Sylvia. Well, boys, as you can see, I got my work to do. Why don't you get the hell out of here and do yours?
Caesar heads off, flanked by two bikini-clad women. Blonde Sylvia studies Joe closely.
You have very strong hands.
Hey, Sylvia Wiss! Wow!
Why, yes, that's me.
They ought to transfer you to missing persons, Strebeck. You know everybody.
Friday, don't you read the papers? This Saturday is Bait Magazine's 25th anniversary party. Caesar is reuniting all of his former bait mates. You know, Miss Sylvia Wiss, right here, was the very first bait mate ever.
Fascinating.
Sergeant, if I asked your honest opinion about something, would I get it?
You can bet the house on it.
Would you say that these look like the breasts of a 43-year-old woman?
Joe's eyes widen.
No. No, they don't, Miss Wiss. They're quite impressive. Bordering on spectacular. We have to be running along now.
What's your hurry, Sergeant? Wouldn't you like to have an early lunch?
Listen, say, Joe, you know, it's a darndest thing. I seem to have left my notebook in the car, and it's going to take me 15, 20 minutes, half an hour or so to find it. Why don't you pump Sylvia here privately for information, and I'll, you know...
Nice meeting you, Miss Wiss.
I had a good time, too.
Come on, Strebeck. Let's go to the car and find that notebook.
On the front steps...
Are you crazy? Sylvia Wiss wanted you.
Now, let me tell you something, Strebeck. There are two things which clearly differentiate the human species from animals. One, we use cutlery. Two, we're capable of controlling our sexual urges. Now, you might be an exception, but don't drag me down into your private hell.
You got a lot of repressed feelings, don't you, Friday? Must be what keeps your hair up.
Pep and Joe march side by side along a pavement near the HQ. They arrive at Police Dogs, a hot dog stand. Pep gets a plate of fruit. Joe gets two hot dogs and chips.
What is bothering you besides me?
I'm thinking about those Pagans. If all they were after was revenge against Jerry Caesar, I'd chalk it up to slime versus slime. But when they start attacking great institutions like our city zoo, that's when my hackles sit up and turn red.
You're gonna lose those red hackles altogether, you eat those chili dogs.
I can handle it.
They're the worst thing for you. They're filled with nitrites and toxins and poisons, and you're doubling up on them.
Let me tell you something, mister. Unlike you, outside of cigarettes, I only have one vice, and a good chili dog is it. So please pipe down and let me enjoy my lunch in peace.
Okay. You know the kinds of things that can fall into an industrial sausage press? Not excluding rodent hairs and bug excrement.
I hate you, Strebeck.
As they tuck into their lunch, they fail to spot two thieves stealing their car. They arrive at the HQ with faces like thunder.
With the exception of you and canned cling peaches, I'd be hard-pressed to find anyone or anything that doesn't know you should never leave your car keys in the ignition.
It's called a mistake, Friday, but I don't suppose you ever make any of those, do you?
Friday, Strebeck, we got another one. Chemical train hijacked down at the freight yards. Damn Pagans must be living on no-dos.
Yes, sir, Captain. We'll roll as soon as we requisition a new
one. One more thing. Police and fire departments all over the county have been reporting vehicles stolen. So keep an eye on your car.
Pep scurries off. They arrive outside Grest Chemicals in a light silver hatchback.
1:15 p.m. After requisitioning a replacement vehicle, we were issued a new Ford Escort subcompact, and we responded to the call at the vast Terminal Avenue freight yard, Southern California's largest railhead, with more than 1,000 miles of track lying parallel over 2 million individual ties, hewn from the state's majestic redwood forests. 3,000 gallons of a deadly pair of chemicals had been siphoned individually from their respective hijacked tanker cars. We questioned the battered train engineer, Senior Tito Provençal, and then attempted to determine the precise identification of the two missing noxious gases from the owner of the chemicals company, a Mr. Roy Grest.
Actually, trichloronitromethane and the pseudohalogenic compound cyanogen.
Pseudohalogenic compound cyanogen, uh-huh.
Oh, well, they're shipped in separate containers. When it's mixed properly in the exact ratio, they form a liquid fertilizer. It's clear as water, but you wouldn't want to smell it.
Why is that, Roy?
Basically, it burns the eyes, lungs, and throat, causes vomiting, and if continuously inhaled, death.
Oh, sort of like your aftershave.
Joe looks around sharply at Pep. At a newsstand, Joe picks up a copy of American Moral Companion magazine and flicks through it. On a nearby TV...
And now it's time to advance with the Reverend Jonathan Worley, founder of MAMA, the Moral Advance Movement of America. Today, Dr. Worley's special guest is Police Commissioner for the City of Los Angeles, Ms. Jane Kirkpatrick. Dr. Worley.
Thank you, George, and welcome once again to Advance. Commissioner.
Please, Dr. Worley, will you call me Jane?
Only if you call me Jonathan.
Have you seen this guy? What a mental furball.
Just happens to be one of my favorite shows, Strebeck. Why don't you listen and learn?
What a deep honor it is for this city that you have chosen Los Angeles to be the new focal point for the moral advance movement of America.
Oh, it's quite simple, really. Jane, if one wishes to effect a financial upheaval in this country, one should set his or her sights on Wall Street. If one wishes to revolutionize the political system, he or she would naturally go to Washington. But when dealing with pornography, filth, crime, degradation, what better place is there to begin with than Los Angeles, the current capital of depravity? What sadly passes for the modern world.
Pep and Joe arrive outside a tenement block and head into the courtyard, where some residents doze in deck chairs.
2:15 p.m. We had been advised to follow up on a theft at 8823467 Magnolia Boulevard. At this time of day, it took us 20 minutes to get there. The complainant was the landlady, Juanita Borden. Some pagan cards had been found.
A sour-faced woman opens the door.
You want?
Police officers, ma'am.
Why couldn't you have got here before that big, bad, stupid-looking piece of sewage breath stole my white wedding dress?
Miss Borden, sewage breath would be your little nickname for...
Muzz. Emil Muzz.
Not much of an improvement.
That asswipe also stiffed me for 2 months' rent when his deposit check bounced. Goddamn pus-faced little pimpstick. All that was left in this room was a big box of these things.
She hands a bunch of pagan cards to Joe, who shows Pep.
Any idea where this Emil Muzz could be right now? Friends? Family?
Nah, he was a loner. Took off in the middle of the night. Useless scum lapping.
Just the facts, ma'am. He leave anything else behind?
Yeah, tape deck, which I had to sell to make up for the lost rent. So there's nothing you can do about it, you slimy little jizz bucket.
Yes, ma'am, although I should point out to you that technically you could be cited for swearing at us like that.
Says who, flathead?
Says the California Penal Code, section 314.1, covering obscene live conduct in public. Good enough for you, lady?
Them magazines and papers were his down in the trash. No checks or money, I looked. I should have thrown it all in the river the day he left, but unlike some people, I have a heart, goddammit. That miserable little bag of puke.
I think we're finished here, don't you, Detective Strebeck?
A dust cart drives past.
Hey, didn't she say that she threw some of his stuff in the trash?
Uh-huh. There it goes. Let's roll.
They hurry into the car and drive off after the departing dust cart. Joe smokes a cigarette as he fishes through rubbish with a pencil alongside Pep. They've strewn the trash over a picnic table by the side of the river.
Boy, am I glad I got transferred into robbery homicide. You can almost reach out and touch the tension, you know?
Hey!
What the hell was that?
It has its days.
Yeah, like today. Sitting in a park, getting eaten by ducks, sifting through somebody's garbage. Hello. Photograph some people, kind of faded.
Maybe one of them's Muzz.
Well, we couldn't be that lucky.
It's a Polaroid of two women in leotards.
Hey, phone number on the back. Think that could mean something?
There's only one way to find out now, isn't there?
They arrive at a phone booth. Pep finds the handset broken. He gives it to Joe.
It's for you. It's the president.
Joe dumps the handset on top of the booth. Another booth is missing the entire phone. Joe shakes his head. Pep plays with a yo-yo as Joe stands at the front of a long queue by a working phone booth.
It's ringing.
Pep hurries over.
Good afternoon, Caesar Residence.
Bingo.
Hello, may I help you?
Emil Muzz, please.
He's not here right now.
This is Detective Sergeant Friday, Los Angeles Police, ma'am. Could you tell us where he is? It's quite important.
Well, since he's Mr. Caesar's driver, and Mr. Caesar's out sailing on his yacht.
At the harbor.
That's it, the limousine from the mansion.
Yeah, and that's Emil Muzz.
Let's check Enid Borden's description.
Well, big, bad, stupid looking.
An exact match.
Emil lies asleep in the front of a limo parked outside the gate to Caesar's dock. He's the mustachioed fire chief from the warehouse. Pep and Joe march over towards the limo and take out their badges.
Police officers, Emil Muzz.
We need to ask you a few questions, Emil.
Blow it out your pants, cop.
Oh, good, Muzz.
give yourself a hard time.
Emil smirks and drives the limo over Joe's feet. Joe's mouth gapes open and he dances around in pain.
I'll drive! I'll drive!
They hurry back to the Ford as the limo drives away round a bend. They set off round the bend and pursue Emil along the harbour. In a chauffeur's suit and cap, Emil laughs maniacally. In the Ford, Joe grabs the two-way radio.
What are you doing? Calling for backup. Why? Because there are specific departmental regulations for high-speed pursuit, mister, and we're going to follow every last one.
Forget it, Friday. This is our collar.
Our collar, huh?
I think so.
Well, just let me tell you something, Mr. Lone Wolf. The dedicated men and women of the Los Angeles Police Department comprise one big family, from my brother, the traffic cop, to my sister, the meter maid. And when one of us makes a collar, we all make a collar.
Friday, are you on any special medication that, as your partner, I should be made aware of?
2 King 14, 2 King 14. I am requesting a backup.
Pep grabs the radio. Emil gulps. Turning a tight corner, Emil's limo catches a rope and trails two wooden boats behind it. One of them hits a passing car. Emil weaves between traffic.
Look out!
Pep swerves the Ford round cars blocking the road. The limo smashes through a store filled with cuddly toys. Pep follows.
Look out, Muppets!
The chase heads down a street. A cuddly dog is stuck to the limo's front grille. Locals scatter as the limo careens through a market stall and onto the beach. Joe makes notes.
Reckless endangerment of human life, willful disregard of private property, failure to signal for a safe lane change.
Yeah, he's really racking up the violations, isn't he?
Not him, you. This is your one-way ticket back to civilian life, mister. I like to throw the book out the window.
That's a good idea.
Pep grabs the notebook and throws it out the window. They chase Emil along the waterline, swerving between paddlers.
Hey, Joe, you ever been to Hawaii?
The limo powers up a lifeguard ramp and crashes through the hut.
Look out!
The limo gets stuck at the top of the ramp. The Ford crashes underneath it. The cuddly dog falls off the limo. Joe leaps out.
Surf's up, beach boy, but not for you. You'll be hanging 10 downtown. Read him his rights.
Hey, Mamaz, guess what? You are under arrest.
In an interview room.
Sit down, unless you're growing.
Look, Muzz, we've got you on 87 violations of the motor vehicle code. It's only a matter of time before we tie you into one of those pagan jobs. Not to mention the fact that you stole your landlady's wedding dress, which so far is the only endearing thing about you. So why don't you talk to us?
He spits in Joe's face.
Listen, you public pawn. My attorney's on his way, and we both know I'll be out of here in 20 minutes on bail. So take off these cuffs and open the door!
I wouldn't worry about the door, Muzz. The kind of scum who'd represent you would just ooze right under it.
Look, Joe, why don't you go get a couple of cups of coffee? I know I could use one. You want anything, Muzz?
Chewing gum, a Snickers bar, and my attorney badge, kisser!
Joe wipes the spittle from his face with a hanky, then glances at Pep. The two cops share a nod. Joe looks at Emil sourly, then heads for the door and leaves the room.
Well, Emil, I guess it's just you and me and this drawer.
He snaps it shut, startling Emil. Outside, Joe gets a coffee from the machine. Hearing the screams, Joe smiles and nods to himself. He returns to the interview room.
4:15 p.m. By the time I'd returned with coffee, Muzz was singing like Beverly Sills. He had been planning to attend a meeting that night at the Pagan Clubhouse, of which he was a member. But he refused to divulge the time or location of that meeting.
Okay, Muzz, let's run through it again. You say you're a pagan, but we found you working for Jerry Caesar. That makes you a plant in my book. Why don't you make it easy on yourself and lead us to the stolen magazines?
Jump on this and spin, cop! I'm not saying another word until my attorney gets here.
Say, Joe, wouldn't a couple of danishes go great with this coffee right now?
Pep opens the drawer again. Emil gulps. Pep and Joe smirk at Emil. Then Joe heads for the door.
At 7:13 p.m., Captain Gannon authorized us to stake out Muzz's clubhouse located in the ecologically balanced San Gabriel Mountains. When a Code 5 authorization for undercover surveillance is approved, officers proceed to the Central Facilities Building, where the department has an impressive body of research on the precise behavior and dress of today's average street gang member.
Joe's dressed as a punk with a mohawk, and Pep wears a hairnet and a fake mustache.
You know, Friday, I think we finally found your look.
9:56 p.m. We were issued appropriate surveillance apparel and withdrew from Central Receiving one distressed 1985 unmarked Ford sedan.
Yeah, it's right up here. It's just off Highway 61.
Yeah, probably some rat hole roadhouse where they sit around watching TV and suck beers all day. Uh-oh. Highway Patrol. And they're pulling us over.
Joe pulls the rusty sedan over by the quiet roadside. The Highway Patrol car pulls up behind them. Two cops climb out and head over.
License and registration.
What was the offense, officer?
It's okay, Floyd. They're pagans.
Yeah?
Yeah. Show them your card. Muzz, Emil.
Yeah, that's right. That's me. Muzz, Emil. Emil Muzz. I've been sick.
Sorry to bother you, fellas. We can't be too careful, though, huh? We don't want any non-pagans around here, especially tonight. Right, huh?
Follow us, fellas. The party's just starting.
Bogus cops. No matter how many times I see that little maneuver, it never ceases to disgust me.
You mean people dressing up in strange clothes, pretending to be who they're not?
Exactly. That kind of behavior. Just get out that list of stolen black and whites.
No, 99474. Oh, yeah, it's hot, all right.
Yeah.
Joe drives the car back onto the road. They follow the patrol car to a fenced-off compound and head through the gate, which is manned by two men in bearskins.
Howdy, I'm Emil Muzz, and I'm a pagan.
They head along the driveway, lit by flaming torches, passing groups of milling pagans. They park. A pagan in a devil's head mask pops up by Joe's window.
Good evening, pagans. Don't forget your goat leggings.
The man hands them some goat's wool leggings. They get out of the car, which is amongst more stolen patrol cars.
Must be every other stolen police vehicle on our hot sheet. We're definitely onto something here.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. There's a school bus nearby.
I see school is out.
Yeah. Right now, all I can think of is 38 little kids standing individually on lonely street corners waiting for a bus that'll never come.
Friday, put your goat leggings on and try to blend in.
They sit by a fire. Pep mucks about with his white leggings.
Put it to sleep, Strebeck.
Down, boys.
Yeah. You have to admire their techniques in crowd control.
Yeah. Cozy little group, eh? Just like your local Rotarians.
Hey, listen. We get a little wild at times, sure. But nothing like this.
They stop by an amphitheater dominated by three long red flags with black symbols on them. A big crowd jigs around. Many of the surly-looking pagans carry devil's heads on staffs or flaming torches.
I'd say this is shaping up to be a little more than just a series of simple robberies. People against goodness and normalcy. P-A-G-A-N. Pagan.
Nice work, Joe.
Ah, here are two who have not yet sipped the nectar of Shaitan.
The pagan hands them goblets. Another one proffers a tray of pills.
A small surprise before the ceremony starts?
Why not?
Pep fills his pockets with various pills.
You?
I had a big lunch.
The masked pagan wanders off. Joe and Pep watch the crowd doing a sort of leg-waving dance and join in. They're handed staffs with devil heads on top, which they wave as they dance. On a raised stone platform, the pagan high priest, in a devil mask and long white robes, stares down at the crowd below. He thrusts his hand into the air.
I, your high priest of living pagan perfection, do call the name Gahoon.
Do call the name Gahoon.
Two masked priests descend from the platform.
Prepare the Virgin. I don't like the sound of that.
Let's just hope they're not referring to you.
In this bat, I do consecrate.
With this bat, he does
consecrate. Madagascar fruit tree bat from the zoo.
Good eye.
With this lion's mane, I do consecrate.
With this lion's mane, he does consecrate.
Now all that's missing is one humongous 30-foot groundhog-gulping reptile.
For the final touch to our brood tonight, a pristine virgin in a gown of white.
The two masked priests usher a scared-looking brunette out from under the platform. In a wedding dress, she scans around the amphitheater, gawping and frowning.
Evil bringeth here our queen. She's as pure as she can be, white.
She stands at the end of a stone ramp.
2-1, that's Enid Borden's wedding dress.
20-1, Enid Borden never looked that beautiful on her wedding day.
She's pushed into a pool in the middle of the amphitheater.
Friday!
Let's move.
As the crowd rushes down the steps towards the smoky pool, Joe and Pep barge their way to the edge.
Can you swim?
Red Cross, junior lifesaver with clusters, bub.
Silly me.
They both step back, then dive headlong into the pool. As they surface, Pep is in the grip of a huge snake.
Friday! Be back!
I found the snake!
What the hell goes on down there? Who are those two clowns?
Who are you?
Friday, street back. Los Angeles police officer.
Joe's dragged under as Pep battles the snake.
Where are you from, miss?
Anaheim.
Uh-huh. And her favorite color is blue.
Jesus Christ, I'm about to be eaten here!
Those big guys grabbed me off the street last night.
Were you sexually assaulted?
No! Thank God! She needed a virgin!
You're still a virgin?
She nods.
My hat's off to you, ma'am. Hope you stay that way.
A big screen shows them struggling with the snake.
Be back! Quick! Do something! It's constricting! Distract it!
Joe punches the tail end, which is wrapped around him and the virgin. Pep takes the pills from his pocket and drops them into the snake's mouth, then holds it shut. The snake swallows the pills. They watch wide-eyed as the snake straightens, then flops and falls backwards into the pool.
Anybody need some boots?
Pep's moustache hangs off his lip.
They're heading for the top. Stop! Go!
Pep and Joe usher the virgin through a hatch at the side of the pool. The three of them run along a grimy, narrow service corridor, which has pipes running along the wall. They arrive outside to face a chanting crowd of pagans. Joe takes out his police badge.
You are all under arrest. Each of you has the right to remain silent. If you waive the right to remain silent, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
Oh, for crying out loud!
Pep fires his gun into the sky. The crowd parts and they rush through. Pep batters a pagan. Joe fires his gun into the sky.
How come his is so much much bigger than yours.
Miss?
The gun.
I've never needed more.
As Pep trades punches with a burly pagan, the high priest grabs the virgin's shoulder. She knocks his mask off. It's Reverend Whirly from the TV. He shields his face. Joe fights a pagan.
Come on, Joe!
Joe pulls the virgin away. He and Pep fight pagans by the fire. The virgin kicks a pagan in the groin. Joe disarms a cattle prod wielding pagan and steals the prod. He zaps another one.
Friday, our car! We can steal it back!
Right.
I'll drive!
Pep opens the door.
Forget it, Strebeck. We're responsible for the safety of a civilian here, and frankly, mister, you just don't belong behind the wheel of a car.
He ditches the cattle prod as the virgin gets in the passenger seat and Pep gets in the back. He jumps in behind the wheel, and they drive off.
Just hang on and keep your head down.
Okay. He smashes through the gate in the fence.
Good driving, Joe.
Yes, you were wonderful.
Excuse me, miss. I never did catch your name.
Swale. Connie Swale. Your name is Friday?
Joe.
Joe.
Joe. They smile at each other. From the back seat, Pep watches dubiously.
Pep. Pep Strebeck. Glad to meet you.
Smitten with Joe, she ignores Pep. In a nice suburban street, they park outside a pink and white clapboard house, which has a pink fence around the garden.
You certainly have a beautiful home, Miss Swale.
You bet. Can the beaver come out and play?
Connie beams at Joe, who gets out of the car.
Good night.
Good night.
Joe opens Connie's door and escorts her down the front path.
Will I ever see you again, Joe?
Absolutely. You're our main witness. We'd like you to come downtown, take a look at the mug books, see if you can make a positive ID in the man you saw. I'll have a policewoman come down here tonight, keep an eye on the house, and bring you downtown to Parker Center tomorrow. Here's my card. You'll be needed for further questioning.
Pretty Connie takes the card from Joe, then steps over to her pink front door. She turns to face him.
I don't know why, but somehow I feel I could tell you anything, Joe.
He smiles sweetly at her. At the HQ...
Friday, January 9th, 3:12 a.m. We returned from Anaheim, where we had dropped off the Virgin Connie Swale. I telephoned Captain Gannon at home, waking him. After absorbing several minutes of gratuitous verbal abuse, I requested him to meet us as soon as possible at his office.
Come in. Evening, Captain.
3:35 a.m. We proceeded to relate the details of our successful follow-up on the pagan robberies and briefed Captain Gannon on the outlandish festival we had attended, even going so far as to demonstrate the goat dance which we had engaged in as part of our undercover role in the operation.
This music pulsing over and over
again. Stop it!
At this point, Captain Gannon became quite upset, accused us of being on an all-night drinking binge, and based on our general appearance, seemed reluctant to contact the sheriff's department to investigate the area.
Captain, if you will just call the sheriff's department, I have the directions to the compound right here in my pocket.
As he pulls out a piece of paper, loads of pills fly out. Gannon picks one of them up.
Hay fever? Illegal narcotics, sir. Actually, hallucinogenic love drugs. The pagans were taking them, we were trying to fit in.
Uh-huh.
If it weren't for the drugs, we couldn't have gotten away from the snake.
The snake? I forgot about the snake. How big did you say it was again?
30 feet long.
Actually, sir, we'd like to request the opportunity to have you come down to the crime scene and visually verify a report. And if you could call Commissioner Kirkpatrick, we believe this incident, because of its sheer magnitude, is worthy of her personal attention as well.
Friday, do you have any idea what time it is?
Yes, sir.
Don't ask him that, Captain.
It's 4:27 a.m., sir.
He lives for that. It's in his blood.
Thursday, January 8th, 5:45 a.m. Having gained Captain Gannon's grudging agreement to contact the commissioner and proceed with us to the San Gabriel Mountains, we eventually arrived at the scene of the previous night's debauchery.
Pep and Joe are still in their pagan outfits as they arrive at the amphitheater. Haughty Commissioner Jane Kirkpatrick strides over.
What is this, Gannon? Some sort of juvenile cop humor? And where the hell's this supposed pagan festival?
I can't understand it, sir. There was a huge electronic screen up there with pagan vision written all over it.
Yeah! Yeah! And this was the hole that was filled with water. We had to dive in to save the virgin who was being eaten by the giant snake!
Captain, who are these painted cretins?
Two of my best men, ma'am.
That's right. That's right.
They're heading up the pagan investigation.
They were heading up the pagan investigation. As of now, you may consider them off it.
But, Commissioner...
Gannon, what am I going to tell the press? That now we are investigating invisible crimes on the word of two trick-or-treaters?
With all due respect, ma'am, you are a civilian and probably unaware the department has regs authorizing us to wear specialized apparel during assimilation surveillance.
Sergeant, you yourself were once a civilian, I assume?
Yes, ma'am.
If you do not drop that insubordinate tone, you'll be one again sooner than you think.
She heads back to her limo.
Wait a minute, Friday. I've never known you to act this way, Friday. Certainly not the type of behavior that your Uncle Joe would have approved of. You know the kind of man he was. I suggest that you try to be a little more like him from now on.
Yes, sir. I'll try.
Good.
At the HQ, Joe is at his desk. He's engrossed in a copy of American Moral Companion magazine. He arches his eyebrows and nods at an article. Sitting opposite, Connie looks through a folder of mugshots. She closes the folder.
I'm sorry, Joe. He's not in any of these. And I'll never forget his face.
Okay. I guess this officially closes my end of the investigation.
He gets up and paces round the desk.
As far as your personal safety is concerned, I wouldn't worry. That guy's probably a couple hundred miles from here by now.
She smiles and walks away. He puts the magazine down. The article he was reading was called Jonathan Worley and Mama, The Man, The Movement.
10:30 a.m. I went to pick up Detective Strebeck at the sanitationally questionable commune, which passed for his apartment building in the come-as-you-are section of Venice Beach.
There's a wave painted on the side of the building. Joe doesn't spot a catering van pull up. Behind the wheel is Emil in chef's whites. Joe is at Pep's front door.
The door was opened by police officer Betsy Blease, who had apparently dropped by to chat about more effective methods of law enforcement. They'd been playing a version of good cop, bad cop, and though I was unable to fathom the rules, it seemed clear that Strebeck had lost this particular round. At any rate, playtime was over, and it was back to routine duty for me and Pep Strebeck.
Hey, Joe, listen, I suddenly got very hungry. What say we stop in and grab some sushi, huh?
Come on, Strebeck, we're late for our watch already, and raw tuna really isn't my bag.
Joe's car explodes across the car park. Pep and Joe pull their guns and aim around them, but there's nobody there. They stand before the burning wreck. Joe frowns.
My hat was in that car.
Yeah, I can tell you just who reblocked it for you.
Pagans, I need some coffee.
I know where they serve the best in town. Come on.
Joe sips coffee at a pole dancing club.
You know I hate to admit it, Strebeck, but for once in your life, you're right. This is good coffee.
Oh, you should try the French toast.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Joe, lend me $20.
Do I know you long enough to lend you money? I don't think so.
I know we've been ordered off the pagans, but that doesn't mean that technically we can't follow up on one of their thefts.
The trichloronitromethane and the pseudohalogenic compound cyanogen.
Listen, there's only one illegal lab in the city with the capacity and the personnel and the equipment to mix those two chemicals into a deadly gas. We've been waiting for months in narcotics to bust this place, and we can do it tonight.
Forget it, Strebeck. It's strictly out of our jurisdiction now.
Joe, police work is a matter of us against them, not Mother May I. Hi, Kay. How are you? I could find out where they've set up the lab this week.
Oh, how?
By you lending me $20.
Joe gives Pep $20. Pep pops a cherry into the waiting Kay's mouth, then hurries off. Joe gets out of a cab.
6:30 p.m. After witnessing the gratuitous sex display at Strebeck's favorite coffee house, and an outlay of $50 by me to one of his old informants, I proceeded by celebrity cab to 339-6834 108th Street, an illegal drug lab grotesquely disguised as a legitimate place of business.
Strebeck had gone to seek assistance from some friends of his in the undercover narcotics unit where he used to work. Funny how it didn't surprise me that he was late, even though he knew I was waiting in a part of town where it's not advisable to just stand around whistling.
Hey! Superhead!
Three thugs glare at Joe, who turns around.
Up a little late tonight, aren't we, kids?
Let's have one of your smokes.
It's an unhealthy habit I don't encourage in others, son. Get smart. Give it up by not taking it up.
Thanks for the public service announcement. Now hand over your money, and I'll go buy my own smokes.
Well, if you're that strapped for cash, I'd suggest a part-time job. How about a paper route? It builds character. It did in my case.
Hey, we're not asking you for your money, Ozzy.
No?
No.
Are you threatening me, son?
One of the thugs pulls a knife and Joe punches him in the mouth. The thug hits the floor. Joe karate kicks another one, then all of them run off. Joe calmly picks up his cigarette off a nearby crate.
And on a school night, too.
He shakes his head and puffs on the cigarette. In an alleyway, a sign above a big door reads, "Fresh wholesome milk." There's a model of a cow above it. A man in white looks through a window in the door. He spots a police RV rolling up the alleyway with a battering ram on the front. Written on the end of the ram, "Have a nice day."
Hit the deck!
The RV crashes through the door. The model cow falls off its perch. The RV smashes through pipes and vats, spraying milk everywhere as employees scramble for cover. The RV turns towards a large vat and rams it. The battering ram pierces the vat and more milk sprays out over the RV. Pep and Joe open hatches and rise out of the RV in yellow biohazard suits. They take off their gas masks. Pep sticks out his tongue and tastes some of the milk raining down all around them.
I can't quite place it! It tastes like milk. Just like the sign said in the building before you obliterated it. Fresh, wholesome milk.
You probably love this stuff, don't you?
Vitamin D, calcium, essential for good strong bones and healthy teeth. But that's probably all Greek to you, isn't it, Mr. Gingivitis?
Outside, they argue with some milkmen.
7:15 p.m. After explaining to the proprietors of the milk factory that they were helpless to take legal action against the city since we had properly obtained a search warrant, our apology was reluctantly accepted, and Strebeck and I were on our way back to Parker Center. After losing the two previous vehicles we had been issued, the only car the department was willing to release to us at this point was an unmarked 1987 Yugo. A Yugoslavian import donated to the department as a test vehicle by the government of that country and reflecting the cutting edge of Serbo-Croatian technology.
They get in the little bronze-colored Yugo and drive away. A milkman whistles in the alleyway. Emil comes out of another doorway, then looks back inside and waves. Beneath a sign reading Alphonse and Gaston Catering Service, a garage door rises and a truck with a silver container drives out. Written on the container, "Fresh, wholesome milk," by a picture of a smiling cow. Emil grins as the truck drives away.
Strebeck, I've been thinking. Maybe your informant was right. Maybe the Pagans anticipated our little raid and mixed those chemicals into a deadly gas before we got there.
Hey, Friday?
That's me.
What do you like to do for fun? I mean, I'm your partner now, and I don't even know where you live.
That's right, mister, you don't.
Pep eyes his wrist.
Strebeck, why are you always looking at your watch?
I'm watching my TV. You don't like my music, you don't want to talk, so I'm watching my TV.
Jerry, appear at the annual Law and Order Foundation dinner, where Los Angeles Mayor Peter Parvin is fighting for his very own political survival.
Leading that attack again is Police Commissioner Jane Kirkpatrick. Let's hear what she has to say.
True leadership. This rampaging gang of Pagans has made a mockery of the city's administration. Vehicles from the fire and police departments are stolen in broad daylight. Deadly toxic chemicals are on the loose. What next, Mr. Mayor? In my opinion, Mayor Peter Parvin should consider the welfare of his own constituents and do the honorable thing. Resign now.
In the Yugo.
You know, Friday, I think you and the commissioner would make a cute couple. I like the way you both keep your jaws locked. Plus, the two of you do share that same curious affection for hats.
May I remind you that only this morning, Commissioner Kirkpatrick threatened to turn me into a civilian?
Yeah, I know. There was a gleam in her eye, though.
Put a clap on it, Strebeck.
I have never been elected to public office. I have always sought the approval of a somewhat higher power for my actions. The sad truth is that we live here now in a city where even a gross pornographer like Jerry Caesar is not immune from lawlessness. With this grim fact in mind, I am relieved to announce tonight that even Mr. Caesar himself has bravely decided to strike a blow in our common fight against crime. Yes, sir. Yes, indeed. Yes.
This guy knows God personally. I hear they play racquetball together.
Yeah, well, just go ahead and chuckle away, mister. I don't hear God laughing.
You will once he sees your haircut.
My friends, in an unprecedented gesture of atonement, Mr. Caesar has agreed to donate the sum of $1 million to my moral advance movement.
7:52 p.m. After witnessing the raging political turmoil on Strebeck's puny television set, I was really looking forward to the end of a rotten day.
Well, want to go get something to eat?
Not tonight. I have plans.
You do?
Uh-huh.
What? What? Where do you go? What is her name? Does she have a sister?
Good night, Strebeck.
Pep gets out of the car.
Truth is, I don't care where you go.
By his motorbike, he looks back at Joe.
Yeah, I do. I gotta know.
He dons his helmet and climbs on the bike. Joe pulls the Yugo up on a quiet street. As Joe heads into an old-fashioned looking house, Pep pulls up on his bike and climbs off. He removes his helmet and eyes the house.
I knew it. It's Nightmare on Elm Street. And that would make him Freddy Krueger. We're gonna be driving along some night, and the lighting's gonna be bad, and he's gonna mistake me for some pretty little co-ed, and out comes that claw, and... £170 of ground chuck. Who knows what kind of thrill-seeking hose monster he's got stashed in there.
Joe comes out of the front door with a smartly dressed senior lady.
My God, he's dating Mother Goose. Hey, Joe!
Strebeck, what are you doing here?
Joe, who is this nice-looking young man?
He's nobody. My partner. Strebeck, introduce yourself to my grandmother. Quickly.
Well, what a pleasant surprise. Granny Friday.
Not that it's any of your business. She's my maternal grandmother. Her name is Mundy.
Why don't we all discuss this over dinner? It's my birthday. We're going to the Brown Derby. Do join us, Detective Swayback.
Strebeck.
Pep.
Granny, I don't think it's such a good idea.
Why not, Joe?
Yeah, Joe, why not?
Yes, well, it's just that I've invited someone already to join us, and you don't really know her. She's a...
Her? Joe! You have a date?
Joe nods his head wearily.
Oh, I'm so proud!
Pep smirks and slaps Joe on the back.
Well, in that case, it looks like I have a date, too. Granny Mundy, may I escort you to Joe's car?
I'd be privileged, Detective Starkey.
They arrive outside a restaurant in town.
9 o'clock p.m., exactly one night after witnessing the satanic cult rally, I escorted my maternal grandmother to her favorite restaurant, the famous Brown Derby. There was someone I wanted her to meet, and it certainly wasn't Detective Strebeck.
Sergeant Friday, your table is ready. I took the liberty of pouring the Dom Pérignon.
What Dom Pérignon?
Oh, I stopped and phoned in an order in honor of Granny Monday's birthday. Well, you'd want her to have the most expensive kind, wouldn't you?
What a thoughtful gesture. Don't you think so, Joe?
Yes, Granny. It was very considerate of him.
Joe takes Granny Grace's arm and escorts her to their table. Connie's there in a red dress. She looks up and beams at them.
Hello, Joe. Guess I'm early. I was kind of excited.
You sly minx.
Connie, I'd like you to meet my maternal grandmother, Mrs. Grace Mundy. Granny, this is the Virgin Connie Swale.
You're kidding.
Hi.
Well, allow me. Place of honor, Granny.
Thank you.
Certainly. And if I may, a toast to Granny Monday. May you live as long as you want, but never want as long as you live.
Oh.
Here, here.
As they sip champagne, Joe eyes Pep with a little frown.
This is such a happy restaurant.
Commissioner Kirkpatrick, how nice to see you again. Reverend Worley, it's a privilege. An aperitif, perhaps.
You know, I once saw Alan Hale Jr. in here.
Alan Hale Jr., wow! Good looking little buddy!
Strebeck, you just make sure you don't order anything more expensive than the world-famous Cobb salad, and that is a direct order.
Oh, my God.
Connie?
That's him. That man with the collar.
The Reverend Worley.
Please, someone kidnapped me and threw me in that pit with that horrible snake. I'll never forget his face as long as I live.
Connie, you have to be sure about this.
How about very, very sure?
I'm positive, Joe. That's him. The face behind the mask. The man who tried to kill me.
Connie, would you be willing to testify to that under oath in a court of law?
Hey, wait a minute. Settle down here. Let's think about this. Now, that is Jonathan Worley, head of the Moral Advance Movement of America. He's a public hero. You can't just walk up to him.
Strebeck, free-roaming vermin aren't allowed inside restaurants in this city. I'll simply be enforcing the public health code.
Well, now, if you'll both excuse me, I'm afraid the second highest duty calls.
Joe, he is sitting with the commissioner and our captain. You go bust him now, tomorrow you'll be mucking out stalls down at the horse patrol.
Joe ditches his napkin and hurries off. Reverend Worley enters the bathroom. Joe follows him to the cubicles.
Thank you.
Oh, I am sorry.
Hold it right there, Worley. Police officer, you're under arrest.
I beg your pardon. What is this, some sort of a feeble joke?
No, it's a real knee slapper, friend. If you consider California Penal Code sections 484, 207A, 597, and 217 theft, kidnapping, cruelty to animals, and attempted murder, something to laugh about.
I haven't the slightest idea of what you're talking about.
My partner and I witnessed that little torchlight picnic you threw last night, and we're going to put you where your kind always ends up. In a 7x7-foot gray-green metal cage on the 15th floor of some 100-year-old penitentiary with damp, stinking walls and a wooden plank for a bed. Sure, this city isn't perfect. We need a smut-free life for all of our citizens. Cleaner streets, better schools, a good hockey team. But the big difference between you and me, mister, is you made the promise, and I'm going to keep it.
The customers at the urinals applaud as Worley comes out of a cubicle, and Joe cuffs him. Joe puts some change in the attendant's pot. In the restaurant.
Our good reverend's an amazing piece of work, isn't he, Jane? May I call you Jane?
No.
Pep swigs from the bottle of champagne as Joe walks Worley back to his table.
Captain, Commissioner, I demand an immediate explanation for this outrageous behavior.
It's him again. Are you insane?
Commissioner, the Reverend Worley abducted that girl over there. Had his men throw her into a pit filled with criminally polluted water and a giant Bolivian jungle snake.
Oh, Jane, these accusations are preposterous.
I beg to differ, ma'am. Just ask him if he remembers about 3,000 gallons of stolen trichloronitromethane and the pseudohalogenic compound cyanogen, which, when mixed properly, form a liquid fertilizer that burns the throat, the eyes, the lungs, the nose, and could cause vomiting and even death.
Friday, we're just about to eat here.
Reverend Worley, please, please accept our most sincere apologies. Sergeant, you will remove those handcuffs immediately. Then you will hand in your badge. You are relieved from duty.
But, Commissioner...
Now!
Yes, sir. Ma'am.
I don't care.
Commissioner, won't you please speak your mind?
Really?
I know the young man was overzealous, but he springs from a great
tradition.
Excuse me, Commissioner, won't you please change your mind?
Jane drives away in a limo with Worley. In a dinner jacket, Gannon heads over to Joe, Pep, Connie, and Grace, and somberly faces Joe. He takes a deep breath.
Joe, I'm afraid I'll have to take your badge and gun.
Captain, if we could just please...
I don't want to discuss it. Just hand him over.
Joe takes the bullets out of his gun and gives it to Gannon. He takes out his badge wallet and looks at the badge inside. then shuts it. He frowns and hands the badge over to Gannon.
Look, Joe, don't worry. I'm still on active duty. I'm building a case.
You're building nothing. Strebeck, if I ever hear you've come within 1 mile of the Reverend Worley, I'll have your badge for breakfast. Understood?
Yes, sir.
A valet pulls up in Gannon's car, and he goes.
It was very nice of you to try and take us out to dinner, Joe.
Yeah, thanks, Joe, for everything.
Well, let's not all stand around here moping. I'm hungry. Let's go for chili dogs.
Granny, have you ever eaten a chili dog off the back of a motorcycle?
Not till now, you smooth-talking son of a gun.
Grace dons the helmet and gets on the motorbike behind Pep. They ride away. A valet opens the Hugo's door for Joe.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He puts his belt on and arches his eyebrows.
I'm very sorry you lost your job, Joe. But I really did have a very good time.
I'm glad, Connie. Now fasten your seatbelt. I can still effect a citizen's arrest, and I wouldn't want to ruin a wonderful evening by bringing you in on a misdemeanor charge. That was a joke.
Oh.
Never knew the closing of a door.
Joe drives them up to a spot beneath the Hollywood sign in the hills above LA. They watch the sparkling city lights and smile at each other coyly.
Oh, Joe. Look at the stars. Dozens of them. You know, when I was a little girl, I used to wish upon a different star every night for that special someone to come along. Someone with whom I could share everything. But I guess that's not so unusual. All girls do that, don't they, Joe?
Some guys do too, Connie. That's me.
Was there ever anyone else?
Of course there was.
Hey.
Actually, I've only been driving with Strebeck for a couple of days now. Before that, I was with Frank.
That's not what I meant, Joe.
Oh.
She looks at him with big brown doe eyes, then leans forward with her lips apart. Joe looks at her, then leans towards her. They slowly move towards a kiss across the front seats of the Hugo. Then just before their lips meet, Emil picks the car up by its back bumper.
Request code 3, request code 3. Officer in distress, assist officer. Wait, I'll handle this. Wait, calm down.
The Hugo falls on its roof. Emil points a shotgun at them. At Pep's place...
January 9th, 8:37 a.m. My name's Strebeck. I'm a cop. I overslept.
With a blonde.
Curiously enough, I still hadn't heard from my anal retentive ex-partner. Although I was sure he'd be proud to know I was making a concerted effort to personally develop a close relationship with one of my sisters in the Los Angeles Police Department.
She snuggles up to him with her head on his chest. He reaches over to his bedside table. Next to a cheeseburger-shaped telephone is a packet of Titan condoms. He picks them up, but finds the box empty, and chucks it away. He picks up the cheeseburger phone, opens out the buns, and makes a call.
I placed a call to the Virgin Connie Swale, but according to the girl's mother, she hadn't come home either.
I don't know what to say, Mrs. Swale. I'm beginning to be somewhat concerned myself. No, Joe Friday has never stayed out all night either. When the day he was born, his mother had him home by 9 o'clock. Well, let's both stay in touch in case we hear from them. Thank you, Mrs. Swale.
He puts the phone down.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to be late for my stakeout.
As enchanting as Robin was, I still couldn't get my mind off what happened to Joe Friday. You know, for one misguided moment, I actually pictured my ex-partner introducing that little Orange County cupcake to the one piece of his equipment that wasn't issued to him by the department. But then I realized, Joe would never spring for the price of a decent motel room. And since having sex in a Yugo was a logistical impossibility, I came to the conclusion that something must be wrong.
Who cares?
Now you listen to me, Captain. Joe Friday was the most dedicated cop in this city. Okay, so maybe all his dogs aren't attached to one leash. He's thick-headed and insensitive and reactionary, and generally less fun to be around than any person I've ever met. But still, he was my partner.
You want to find Joe Friday, Strebeck? My advice is to start checking out the sanitariums.
Hey, Pep.
Shake and run.
Hey! You!
Me, Pep?
Detective Strebeck to you, rookie. Now let's get this mop trim. Stop shaving with a pocket knife, and the next time you eat your lunch, you put it in your stomach, not on your uniform. You're a disgrace to this department and to that badge on your chest.
As the young cop walks away confused, Pep slaps his own face. Caesar gets out of a vintage gold convertible at the graveyard and heads across the grass. He sits down with Reverend Worley.
You're late, Jerry.
I saw your little announcement about my so-called million-dollar contribution. Do yourself a favor, friend. Try the lottery.
The lottery I can fix. Our problem is Mayor Parvin. I'm afraid he is not going gentle into that good night.
Say what?
That he is not responding to our pressure to resign. We're going to have to push him over the edge. That million-dollar contribution of yours will ensure his presence at your party tonight. Just make sure he turns into a drug-crazed idiot. Complete with pictures. And once he's politically dead, Commissioner Kirkpatrick will be a shoo-in to replace him in the next election. You and I will split effective control of the city. He'll monopolize all pornography. Half the poor dumb sheep in Los Angeles will be forking over money to buy your sleaze, while the other half will be funding me with the means to fight it.
Reverend, you got balls as big as church bells.
Thank you.
As Caesar drives away, Jane pops up from behind a gravestone and hurries over to Worley.
Jonathan, I do not trust that man.
Well, thank goodness he trusts me. That socially retarded hedonist actually believes he's going to be alive tomorrow.
At the police HQ, Pep is at his desk. He picks up the Polaroid photograph they found in the rubbish. He looks at the two women in leotards in the picture. Behind them is part of a sign with something written on it in big blue letters. The sign is for Muscle Beach, where Pep arrives playing with his yo-yo. He walks past girls doing exercises on fitness machines and guys lifting weights. He heads over to where two guys prep a huge set of dumbbells for a meal, then points his gun as Emil lifts them up. Emil gawps.
Where's Joe Friday?
Night, two men guard the entrance to the Griffith Observatory. Inside, Joe and Connie are tied up by a telescope.
No use. She's not too tight.
Untie the girl. She's coming with me.
Joe looks round at Worley.
You hypocritical maniac, if you had one common shred of decency left, you'd let her go and kill me instead.
Instead? But my dear Sergeant Friday, I'd always planned on killing you.
How do you see yourself going down in history, mister? Pagan, a reverend, devil, or angel?
Why, both, of course. One can't exist without the other. Without the Jerry Caesars, there'd be no moral outrage. And what's the good of moral outrage unless you have something tangible to direct it against? By this time tomorrow, thanks to that poison gas you've been tracking like some flu-ridden bloodhound, Mr. Caesar will be sitting in that great big jacuzzi in the sky. And I'll control both sides of the equation.
Sure, but just like every other foaming rabid psycho in this city with a foolproof plan, you've forgotten you're facing the single finest fighting force ever assembled.
The Israelis?
Try the decent, hardworking men and women of Los Angeles.
Forgotten about them? My dear Sergeant, I'm absolutely counting on them.
Joe! Joe!
Thank you.
Whirly ushers Connie into a limo outside. As the limo drives away, Pep rides up on his motorbike. He parks at the base of a statue and climbs off. He heads for the front entrance. Some heavies walk Joe out of the building.
Wise up, fellas. You may have taken a wrong turn somewhere in life, but there's still time to straighten out.
You're the one that's gonna straighten out, cop. All the way down the mountain.
About to shoot Joe, Pep leaps in and batters him.
Let's go, Streetback!
The heavies give chase around the observatory. Pep and Joe head down onto the grass. Joe returns fire with a gun dropped by one of the heavies. They leap on Pep's bike and ride away. The heavies pile into a red convertible and speed off after Pep and Joe.
Just relax, Friday, and hold on tight. Tighter! Pretend I'm Connie!
They swerve up a sandbank and drive through the bushes.
Streetback, there's no road here. No road, look out for it.
Look, there's the mayor. Pretty clever of Whirly maneuvering him up here to Caesar's party. Now he's got both people he wants to eliminate in one place.
Hey, isn't that Whirly's car?
Good evening, Reverend.
Child?
I don't see Connie. All right, the next car comes. Follow me in.
Wait, you can't go in there.
And since when did you become Miss Manners?
In the first place, you don't have a warrant.
California Penal Code, Section 836. A police officer may make an arrest without a warrant if he believes there is probable cause to believe.
You're not a police officer anymore, Joe.
Joe looks crestfallen.
I hate to be the one to break that to you, but it's the truth. You go charging in there now, you're never going to get your badge back.
Whirly's the only one that knows where Connie is. And he's gonna tell me or I'll shove that collar so far down his throat, I'll have to take off his shoes to wring his neck.
Will you listen to yourself? You're not even thinking like a cop anymore. You're thinking like a man in love.
You just watch your language, mister.
Oh, Joe, you've never really had these feelings before, have you?
Almost. I had a kitten once.
Yeah, this is gonna be a little different. See, Connie is not gonna be sleeping in a box or meowing all night or climbing up your drapes. Or maybe she will. I don't know. You both are sort of starting from scratch with this thing.
Get out of my way.
Hey. Last time you went after Whirly, you got suspended. You go in there now, you're going to get arrested.
On what charge, Junior?
How about Section 146A? That's right. Impersonating a police officer. It's for your own good, Joe.
Uh-huh.
You know, in spite of every logical instinct I've ever had in my life, I consider you a friend. A real friend.
He pats Joe on the shoulder.
Streetback, wait.
Joe, go home. Go home. There's nothing more you can do here, believe me. And by the way, my name is Pep. It's not Mr. or Junior or Bub or even Streetback. It's Pep. Friendships start with first names. Joe.
Pep nips out from the bushes and hunkers behind the car as it drives through the archway. In the mansion, a string quartet of glamorous women plays in the busy, huge main chamber.
That's a true story. Joe Frazier said.
Yeah. Thanks for coming. Thank you so much for coming.
Your Honor. So pleased you could make it.
Thank you.
You two, of course, Reverend.
All right, let's just drop the fake civility. Okay, Caesar? I believe you have a check for the Reverend here.
Yes, I do, all in due time.
If it would make us all feel a little better, why don't I just hold on to it until the formal presentation?
Well, whatever.
He teases Whirly before handing the check over.
Well, gentlemen, you're just in time. We're about to start our cultural talent show here. Why don't you pull up a pew next to me? Reverend, I'm sure you'll find these gals socially redeeming.
Outside, Pep sneaks along the tree line and ducks behind a wall as some staff in white jackets walk past. Inside, Sylvia prepares to sing.
Me, 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 me,
Everyone stands up.
Those sweet pipes, Reverend. The bride?
Oh, yes. Indeed. I have a feeling this evening is going to be full of surprises.
Behind the air vents, some pipes run out through the walls and into an Alphonse and Gaston catering van which is parked outside. Pep peers out from behind a corner. Two dump trucks arrive and tip piles of bait magazine onto the driveway. Catering staff pile up boxes of magazines alongside them. The caterers, all of them pagans, usher the women from the archway along at gunpoint. Both women are gagged and have their hands tied. Pep stands up and bumps into an overhanging bush. He rolls his eyes, then steps away from the wall and kneels down. He sniffs at the pipe running along the ground, then turns his head and listens. He runs over to a van.
Thunderhead to Cloud 9, Thunderhead to Cloud 9, do you read me? Our hoses are in place, start the gas when ready.
Cloud 9 to Thunderhead, we're starting the gas.
Nine! Just need to use the phone.
Hey, who the hell are you...
Hey, the white pages, my favorite. Do you ever actually reach out and touch someone?
He knocks the guy at the controls out and shuts the van's back doors on himself.
See if you can get a line on the man they work with. I'll be hitting Route 30 at Cutler Corner. Keep me posted. 10-4?
Hello?
LAPD, Captain Gannon there, please?
Yes, he is.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's work, dear.
Thank you, Delilah. Hello?
Captain Gannon, this is Strebeck. I'm up at the Caesar
Mansion. Strebeck?
Yes, I'm up at the Caesar Mansion, Captain. I'm surrounded by pagans. You better call out SWAT. They've got a small army up here.
Whirly walks out onto the front steps of Caesar's mansion and kisses the check that Caesar gave to him. The pagans empty cans of petrol over the stack of magazines by the gates. Pep is with them in a white caterer's jacket. He empties a can of petrol, then spots a meal alongside him. He uses the can to hide his face. Whirly's limo pulls up, and Emil bends down to the back window. Whirly smokes a cigar.
Reverend, I'll be leaving you in charge here, Emil. I'll be joining a very special passenger aboard my private jet for a few restful days in Acapulco. Don't forget to leave a pagan card so the police and Mr. Caesar's next of kin will give us proper credit for returning his magazines. Oh, and, Emil, ever forward.
Whirly lobs his cigar at the petrol-soaked pile of magazines, then the limo drives away. Emil watches as the magazines catch fire. Pep and the pagans step away as the flames lick higher. Joe drives a convertible away from the mansion. He swerves into a siding as a convoy of police vehicles head in the opposite direction. He frowns to himself.
Police officers, clear the road.
The convoy of patrol cars and police vans roll beneath the archway leading to the mansion. Armed SWAT teams leap out of the vans as they pull up.
What the? Cops! Millions of them! Break out the weapons! Break out the mask over there!
The pagans pull guns and open fire through the gates. The police return fire, taking cover behind the plants that line the driveway. Some of the pagans who wear gas masks are shot. Emil opens fire with a submachine gun.
Stay down.
Guests in the mansion duck for cover as bullets break the windows and riddle the piano. Outside, the SWAT captain dives for cover.
We're pinned down! Hold your position!
Pet peers out from behind a bush. The police RV with the battering ram rears up the drive. The SWAT captain looks round and spots it.
All right, boys, let's do it!
They make a run for the gates as the RV rolls towards the glowing stack of burning magazines. Pep ducks for cover. The RV smashes into the gates, pushing them open. The RV powers through the roaring bonfire, scattering charred boxes of bait magazines across the driveway. Pep stands and watches. The battering ram whacks a couple of pagans around the head as the RV turns round. Joe climbs out of the RV with a shotgun.
Thank God it's Friday!
He punches a couple of pagans. He pulls his gun. A pagan knocks it away. As he dives to retrieve it, Emil treads on his hand.
Ah! So long, hotshot.
Muzz, you weren't even born with the sense God gave the common dog. Don't you realize that's my partner?
As Emil spins round, Joe butts him with the gun and knocks him down. Pep turns Emil over and straddles him.
Thanks, partner.
Read him his rights. Pep.
Pep? You hear that, Emil? He called me Pep.
You know, Muzz, you have the right to remain silent.
If you give up the right to remain silent, anything you say... You know these words, Muzz. Come on, sing along. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
Friday. You got a lifetime subscription to Bates, Dallas, and Field and Creed. You saved my house, you saved my gals, you saved my life. I'll give you anything you want. I'll give you money, bras, automobiles, anything you want. Just say, just name it.
How about taking your hands off my suit?
Absolutely.
Joe! Jerry! Donna!
Ava. Worley's headed down to Mexico in his private jet.
He's got Connie. Let's move it.
Who's Connie?
I don't know. Wasn't she the one?
Never mind. You hungry?
Yeah.
Let's eat.
Gannon arrives.
Friday, Strebeck. Good work. I'll expect a full report in the morning.
Sure thing, Captain. If you'll excuse us, we have a fugitive to apprehend.
Wait a minute, Strebeck. I can't let you take a civilian with you on a hot pursuit.
But, Captain, please.
Sorry, Joe.
Gannon takes out Joe's badge.
You're gonna need this.
Joe looks at his gold sergeant's badge, then at Gannon, who smiles broadly.
I didn't have the heart to turn it in.
Yes, sir.
Joe takes his badge back.
Well, don't just stand there, you petrified monolith of legal propriety. Let's move!
I'll drive!
You seem to be suffering from selective amnesia, Strebeck. I outrank you. I'll drive.
Joe smirks, then climbs in behind the wheel of the patrol car. Joe circles the car over the grass, then motors out onto the main road.
Hey, now be careful, Joe. This is a dangerous road.
Since when are you worried about my driving, Mister? I like life in the fast lane.
He speeds over a junction.
Hey, that was a four-way stop sign you just blew through.
Felt good.
Whoa! Oh, Joe, look out for the bump! You remember those films they showed us in high school? Red asphalt, blood on the highway.
Bub, you picked two of my favorites.
He spins into a handbrake turn amongst traffic. Red and blue lights flashing, they accelerate round a corner. Whirly's limo pulls up by a hangar. He meets Jane, who waits anxiously by a private jet.
Jonathan, I just heard on the police band radio, they've stormed the mansion. They know everything. It's all over. We're finished.
Oh. The girls aboard, of course?
We Yes, but we might as well let her go now. There's no point in keeping her.
You're absolutely right. Watch for the police. I'll untie her. And be calm.
Calm, please.
As Jane steps away, Whirly gets on board, shakes his head, and swings the hatch shut. Jane looks puzzled and heads back over.
Jonathan?
All buckled up? Good.
You freak! Ah! Freak.
Don't worry, my dear. You'll get used to me in time.
Jonathan, I think maybe you actually... Oh, my God!
The plane starts moving.
Jonathan!
Jane ducks beneath the wing and runs after the plane. Joe speeds the patrol car towards a roadblock and swerves to avoid it.
Oh, come on, Joe, slow down! What happened to those departmental regulations on high-speed pursuits? I thought you were safety conscious!
Just close your eyes and think of Christmas.
On the wrong side of the road, they careen through traffic.
The king wants his muscle down on the feast of Stephen and the stolen roundabout.
Deep and crisp and even.
Riley saw the move on that. Those cross was cruel. When a boy man did his best.
Try a course of Silent Night.
They pass a sign for the airport. They arrive by the hangar and pull up.
Oh, he's gone. Let's go home.
No, the runway.
Joe drives the patrol car onto the runway and stops across the tarmac. They get out and stare at the plane heading towards them.
We lost them, Joe.
I have eyes, Peter.
The plane lifts off and flies overhead.
Strebeck was right. We had lost them.
By the patrol car's flashing red and blue lights, Joe frowns to himself. Whirly's jet flies past the rising sun. In the cockpit, he reaches out and touches Connie's cheek. She flinches away from him, and he smiles thinly, then looks round out of the pilot's window. A fighter jet hovers alongside them with a flashing blue police light behind the pilot. The co-pilot pulls off his breathing mask, revealing Joe, who wears a satisfied grin. He nods. Connie breaks into a smile as Joe presses his badge against the fighter's window and points at Whirly, then points down at the ground. Whirly's eye twitches. He glances at Connie, who lifts her chin defiantly. The LAPD fighter jet rises slightly, then the two planes bank right. Whirly's jet drops its landing gear as it descends towards an airstrip in the desert. Whirly's plane hits the tarmac. Patrol cars with their lights flashing drive alongside the runway. They block the plane's path. The jet stops. Connie stands on the tarmac by the jet's wing. She waves as the fighter zooms past. Later, the fighter's landed on the runway. Joe takes off his helmet and hands it to the pilot, who reaches out and shakes his hand. The pilot walks away, and Joe puts his hands on his hips. A uniformed cop leads a handcuffed Whirly away from the private jet. They stop, and Joe eyes Whirly, then nods and smiles thinly. Whirly glowers at him, then the cop leads him away. They pass Connie, who beams at Joe. Joe breaks into a broad grin as Connie steps towards him. He steps towards her, and they meet by the fighter's tail fin.
Hi, Connie.
Oh, Joe. I'm so proud.
They lean towards each other and are about to kiss.
What a collar! What a collar!
Brother Joe, I'm so happy for us. Connie.
Strebeck, isn't there anything job-related that you should be doing at this particular moment?
No, nothing.
He glances at both of them.
Well, I could return our rent-a-rack and maybe file a report.
Joe nods. Pep walks away.
Good. Because I have a whole lifetime to catch up on.
Joe takes Connie by the hand and walks her over to a waiting patrol car. She beams at him and climbs in the passenger side. Written on the driver's door, to protect and serve, Worley's in prison fatigues.
On February 21st, a trial was held in Superior Court, in and for the County of Los Angeles. The Reverend Jonathan Worley was found guilty on two counts of attempted murder, kidnapping, arson, obstruction of justice, and tampering with public utilities. He is presently in the men's correction facility at Chino, serving 43 consecutive 99-year sentences, which makes him eligible for parole in 7 years.
Monday, January 12th, 8:43 a.m. As for Strebeck and me, we're back on day watch at robbery-homicide, where he still exhibits a blatant disregard for departmental procedure. But I am somehow managing to keep this in its proper perspective.
In his grey suit and hat, Joe watches a police bike pull up outside HQ. Pep jumps off the back. The sexy blonde cop removes her helmet.
Bye, Pep. Will you be coming over later?
Oh, yeah, I have to.
Oh?
I'm wearing your underwear.
Joe looks away. Pep kisses the blonde, then turns to Joe, who arches an eyebrow. They head for the entrance. Joe yawns.
Late night last night, partner? I thought the Christian Science reading room closed at 10.
Not that it's any of your business, Mr. National Enquirer, but I had the pleasure of spending a quiet evening in the company of Connie Swale.
Wait a minute. Connie Swale? Don't you mean the virgin Connie Swale?
Joe looks round slowly at Pep, whose eyes widen in surprise. Joe arches one eyebrow, then sets off towards the HQ. ITFC, audio description.
This is the city. It's a city of crime. My name is Friday. I carry a badge. 3:15 a.m., Thursday, January 15th. It was chilly that morning in the City of Angels. On this particular occasion, we happened to witness a pagan ritual in progress. See that, Strebeck? We're just in time. We have stumbled into a major crime.
They got the girl all frightened. Now that's not nice. I think she is the subject of a sacrifice.
Buddy, we're putting this party on ice.
But first, you know, we really ought to read them their rights.
Read them their rights. Read them their rights.
Well, I'm here tonight to rap about your rights. Because right now, you're in trouble. Don't have to say nothing at all. Y'all got too cold, and you better make them on the double.
And it is our job to bust you all for being violent. While we are here, let's state it clear.
You have the right to remain silent.